This podcast is part of Podcast One Sportsnet.
You like saving cash, right? You know what's even better? Saving hundreds of dollars on your car insurance, because a dollar saved is a dollar earned. And if you dig that, then get ready for this, because you can do it right from your living room. All you have to do is go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. Extra money in your pocket? It just might be the most rewarding thing you do today.
He's defeated every champion from every organization the sport of mixed martial arts has ever seen, and retired from the octagon as the biggest draw and the industry's highest paid athlete of all time. And now, Chael Sonnen's on PodcastOne.com. And for that, you're welcome.
What's happening, guys? Happy Wednesday. And thank you for joining another special episode of You're Welcome. All right, let's get into it. Day late, but not a dollar short over here. So Conor McGregor comes out and retires. He says, I'm retired. Well, of course he's not retired. I understand that. But let's just try to break down why say you're retired. We just saw a great retirement from a great fighter called Georges St. Pierre. Georges St. Pierre held a news conference. Okay. Now, he's from Canada. Most of the listeners here are from North America. So perhaps you don't understand. When an athlete of Georges' level of success who comes from Montreal retires, that is news breaking. The cameras are going to show up. Not only is this international news and big in our space, for his area, geographically speaking, this was huge news. So for him to hold a press conference was very appropriate, and you saw the success of that. I'm talking about in terms of how many people came and showed up and brought the cameras and asked questions. I think even more so could be said if Conor McGregor, who has put Ireland on the map, at least in the world of MMA, wanted to retire, that he would have done it in the form of a news conference. Instead, he did it in the form of a tweet. So, okay, transparently untrue? Yeah, of course. I got it. Not even the first time he's done it. He sent out some other tweets before. I can't quote them off the top of my head. Hey, thanks for the cheese, everybody. I'm out of here, folks. Something along these lines. But the retirement would become very relevant. Here, let me back you guys up on this. And this is really important to understand. The first time Conor McGregor came out and said, I'm retired, Dana White had to come in on the back of that and go, whoa, those were just words. There was no intent and no meaning. And I'll tell you why I'm clarifying for him. I don't care if he fights again or not. Guys can walk away whenever they want. But allow me to tell you why I'm clarifying. Under the rules of our new partnership with USADA, if a guy retires, that removes him from the pool. A retirement doesn't have to be in a formal writing or a jurisdiction or a hearing or a commission. It can be as simple and light as, I retire. You guys remember that office with Michael Scott where Michael Scott was having financial problems and somebody told him he could declare bankruptcy? So he walks onto the office floor, gets everybody's attention, and yells out, I declare bankruptcy. And then thought like all of his debts and financial woes were going to go away. Oscar had to slide into the office and go, hey, Michael, just so you know, that's not a declaration for bankruptcy. There's an actual paperwork. The reason I bring that up, as silly as that example may sound, it's one that I know you guys will get. And on the retirement of USADA, it is just as easy as that. You can come out in the form of a text message. You could also go out into the public and say, I'm retired. And it could, at least argumentatively, stop your clock. So to make sure that there was no argument that could be raised, because now there's a re-entry into USADA. By the way, you can't just jump back in. You then have to be tested for X amount of time, similar to what we're seeing Brock Lesnar go through now. So guys don't go on some kind of a ped holiday, if you will. So you see why there's good reason for this. You also see in a business, in an industry that has to be able to move really quickly, why you would be able to come out and declare bankruptcy or declare retirement. So Dana had to come in behind and go, whoa, 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 whoa. These were words. He is not retired. He is staying in the pool. As soon as we take him out of the pool, we don't want to go through the whole re-entry process. So let's make sure that everything's cool in the gang and that we all understand that he's not retiring. So that would be relevant. Is this a real retirement where the USADA clock would stop? Because while I'm well aware that Conor will be back, and while I'm well aware that he plans to be back, and that I'm well aware that he plans to be back this year in 2019, evident of the fact that he's out there training, putting out videos of it, and evident of the fact that less than 48 hours ago, he was on the couch of Jimmy Fallon saying, yeah, I'm looking for a fight. I'm in shape. I'm ready to go. Look at me. So evident of all that, something came up in between the appearance on Jimmy Fallon and the mysterious tweet that goes out that retires him. So I have to come back to the nuts and bolts of it. Now, I get that it's an attention thing. Don't weigh in and tell me, oh, he's looking for attention. He needed a headline. He was drunk. He was this or that. I got the whole thing. I understand Conor McGregor is not retired. What we're going to unpack right now is why did he say that he was? And how sincere should we take this retirement? If you were to go back to one of the ones that he did before where his promoter had to come out on the heels of that and go, whoa, just a second, there's actually consequences and a byproduct to making that statement. Michael Scott, there's actually things that happen. Let's make sure it's very clear to everybody. Those were just words, no intent. Great. That has not happened at this time, at least not at the point that I am coming in here and recording and talking to you guys. That has not happened. So it would appear to me that he will be removed from the pool. If he is removed from the USADA pool, he would then have to re-enter the pool. He will not have the same time constraints against him that, again, by example, Brock Lesnar is going through or went through because he is not a past offender. But he still has to go through the process of which I believe off the top of my head, I used to know this thing perfectly, I think is 2 months. I believe if you have no offense, it's 2 months. But guys, I could be wrong. And it's as much as 4. But it's a meaningful period of time if an athlete was to be in the pool and leave the pool and try to re-enter. There's something very specific for that scenario that I just laid out. Unlike a past offender and what he would have to go through, and unlike a brand new fighter who's perhaps getting signed because of geographical location and a last-minute fight. A last-minute opportunity. He will then be given the benefit of the doubt. And I'm not trying to break down and I'm not trying to create a discussion for you guys on those three different ways to view it. I'm just sharing with you those are the rules. Accept them. But there is consequences. So if we were to hang our hat on the argument that Conor McGregor is just looking for attention, okay. But we have to take into consideration that there will be ramifications for that. So I think we levelly can dismiss that. I don't think it is as simple as attention. No, I don't think that at all. So what else could it be? If he's looking to fight later this year and he's removed himself from the pool, it moves the timeline, much as we saw with Brock Lesnar. And why Brock is now in compliance and has met that time, you still see that fight's delayed. We were told the fight between Brock and DC was going to happen and that it was imminent. We were told that in March of 2018. Here we are in March of 2019. We haven't even put pen to paper on getting a contract yet. So you see where these things, where the dominoes start to fall, where it could be really relevant. All the things that have to come together to when you're dealing with somebody like Conor, that's before you have the outside obstacle. So then what gets revealed to us? Okay, now this was the world's worst kept secret among guys in the business. I've never spoke about it and neither has anybody else within North America, that Conor was in some kind of an investigation for some kind of an assault that took place in Ireland. This was a very poorly kept secret. But the way that the laws in Ireland work, as they were explained to me, unlike here in America, where as soon as somebody is put into handcuffs, as soon as they're fingerprinted and booked, as soon as any kind of a police report happens, that becomes public knowledge. Not only is it fair game for the media, it's fair game for the prosecution and the police and anybody else who wants to speak at it to go out and speak on it. And it will even be put in the local newspaper. Quite literally, there is a section of the newspaper you can flip to and see who got pulled over for whatever they, from A to Z, right? From jaywalking to something a lot darker. It's very public. In Ireland, as it's been explained to me, they don't work that way. They give somebody a full process, which means there's an arrest. There is an indictment. There is a trial. There is a decision made on that trial. And then and only then is it released through the media. I don't know that that is for all crime in Ireland. I don't even know that that is for high crime in Ireland. But I do know when it is something dealing with sexual assault, that is the policy in Ireland. Because this is a sexual assault, he would fall under that. What I'm trying to say to you guys is, yeah, we've all known this shoe was going to drop. But it's out of bounds for anybody to speak about because we also don't have any details. And for anybody, you could see why that'd be a very good law. You would see where Ireland would get some credit for that to protect a guy's name if he's going through it and saying, whoa, let me tell my side of the story. You could see where that'd be very good. Now that that is out, that Conor is under investigation for the sexual assault and it happens to line up with the retirement. Are the two related? That becomes the next question. Conor's team has already come out, said no, they aren't related. Okay, great. The timing's a little bit weird, because I think you don't just look at those two pieces of the timeline. I think you have to look at the third piece of the timeline, which, lo and behold, is Jimmy Fallon. Jimmy Fallon's a huge opportunity for MMA. Very hard to get on his couch. I think Daniel Cormier's been there. I could be wrong. I know Ronda has been there. I know Conor has not. And I don't believe any other fighter has. I mean, it's a big opportunity. It's a big spot. If you're going to go on that couch, if you're given that platform, you want to have something that is marketable. Conor did not have a fight. So he didn't have anything that was directly marketable, but he still hyped it. Hey, I'm getting ready. I'm in shape. Take a look at me. Waiting for something to call. Okay, great. As a fan, now you left me with something to be excited about. And then all of a sudden, the retirement comes at the same time that the shoe drops for the alleged sexual assault in Ireland. So are they related? I don't see it. I don't see it because it would be a sucker's move, in my opinion. Could be missing something. It would appear to me that if there's ever a time that you need a friend, it's right now. I would not think that retiring, excluding yourself, taking yourself out of something very positive, very loved, very coveted, as a means of strategy while having to deal with something so tremendous would be wise. I would think at a time like this, you would keep as many friends and as many doors and as many things open as you could. The other side of that coin is that could easily tarnish the other entity. You may want to come at some, or you have somebody come to you and go, look, this is not going to be good branding. This is not going to be good timing. This is going to be a jam of the highest of levels. It is best if you step away. It is best if headlines do not come out that say, UFC star Conor McGregor, fill in the blank. All right, how many times have we seen that? Coker's had to go through that in the last 18 months. He had two knuckleheads that don't even work for him anymore, but used to, at some point, worked for him under contract, go and do something horrendous. And all the headlines, Bellator fighter, Alexis Avili, Bellator fighter, and some old Bellator guy just robbed a bank. I couldn't tell you his name, but I could tell you he's a former Bellator fighter because that's what the media says. What better way to describe Conor McGregor? What better, instead of just saying, hey, Conor McGregor, no, they're going to attach it to a brand who did nothing wrong. So you could see where maybe Conor, in the spirit of sportsmanship, and hey, you guys did a lot for me, I'm going to get the hell out of your way for a little bit while I go deal with this. Or maybe somebody else came to him and said, hey, separate yourself and do it now. The shoe's going to drop. That's your problem. You dealt something more along these lines. And I think that we have even alluded to it over here, right, guys? We did talk about when the Cerrone-Conor fight was supposed to come up and all of a sudden didn't. And then all of a sudden it's a step further where it can't even come up because now Cerrone's booked against Ally Aquina. We did talk about the fact that perhaps it's just not a good time to book Conor McGregor. Now, when that term was used by me, it was being fully aware that at some point it was going to become public of what he's dealing with in this alleged assault case in Ireland. But all the same, we hit that one on the head, right? It just simply is not a good time to book Conor McGregor.
You're listening to You're Welcome with Chael Sonnen.
Alexa isn't the only one with breaking news. Make sure to hang around at the end of this podcast for the latest breaking headlines on the AP News Minute.
Podcast One's coverage of March Madness runs on diesel.
All right, it's March, which means it's time for the madness. So you know we got it all covered on the big podcast with me, Shaq. The legendary, get him out the game, baby! Dick Vitale, how you doing, coach?
Hey, Shaq, what's going on, man?
And we're way more than just sports, Shaquille. So be prepared to laugh as we bring you the best basketball coverage.
The big podcast with Shaq. Check us out with new episodes every Monday at podcastone.com.
For all you athletes out there, if you're hitting a wall when it comes to getting to that next level in your training, I want you to hear me out about our new sponsor, Biotropic Labs. Biotropic Labs is a premium custom formulation sports supplement company delivering measurable results to athletes and to people who move like you guys. Biotropic Labs and their flagship formulas are built around blood oxygenation, providing nitric oxide effect that relaxes the blood vessel. This is critical for energy and oxygen-carrying red blood cell support. These formulas help you achieve a natural lift and recovery and enhance your training, making you feel great and offering that missing edge that you need. Biotropic Labs is the place to come when everything else hasn't worked. Go to www.biotropiclabs.com. That's biotropiclabs.com. Use the promo code CHAIL. When you check out, you're going to get 20% off Biotropic Labs' flagship and premium products with free shipping. And just for listeners of this program, for one-time purchases, plus save even more money when you choose AutoShip, bringing the total discount to 30%. Again, that is www.biotropiclabs with an S.com. Use the promo code CHAIL at checkout for a 20% off flagship and premium products, and they always ship free.
Now back to your welcome with CHAIL Sonnen.
I got a great show on HBO. I think it's called Theranos. I don't know how the hell you pronounce it. And not really relevant to my story. I knew this story. I'd known this story ever since it happened, like a year ago. So there's a girl named Elizabeth Holmes. She goes to Stanford. Now, one thing that I was never clear on, though I imagine it was very clear in the show and the articles that I had read over a year ago, I was never clear if she dropped out of Stanford or if she graduated Stanford and subsequent went and started this company, Theranos. I don't know that, but though it may be relevant to the story, let's just pick up from there. So Elizabeth Holmes has a really good Rolodex. She's got a really good list of people to call and go out and pitch an idea to and try to generate and raise money. I mean, some powerful, powerful, respected people. They buy into her and they buy into her idea. And all that her idea is, this entire business is real simple. She can run a full panel analysis on a person that would need blood to do a blood panel with the prick of a fingertip. With whatever blood she can draw with one simple prick of a fingertip, she can run a full panel in what other people in science and medical fields would need tubes and tubes of blood to do. Now, I can tell you, as a guy who has to give blood for licensing, for all sorts of reasons, I have to give blood, drug testing, I give a lot of blood, more than most of you who may be listening to this going, man, in my whole life, I've never given blood. Well, I personally could just relate to this. It's a bit of a pain in the ass, right? I mean, they'll go in, they go into a vein. If they call and they test you multiple times in a week, which happens to be the same week that you're applying for a license and trying to go and get your blood. I mean, you know, you're getting poked in the same sensitive vein 2 and 3 times in a week before it hurts, right? It hurts. It's a little bit intrusive. So she has found a way that with the prick of a finger, she can go and run all of these same tests. That's her entire business. And you may say that sounds simple, but I can tell you there is an entire segment of society who has to go in and do this. And if you were able to do it with the prick of a pen in and out the door, sure, you got a market. So her company becomes huge. I want to say she was like 23 years old, 24 years old. She's worth $9 billion. She's running a full-scale operation. I mean, this isn't a little ma-and-pa thing, some corner shop that she leased for a couple bucks a month. She's not working out of a garage. I'm talking about a big, beautiful, full, multi-billion-dollar operation with that many staff and employees, and she's doing really great things. And some people started to raise questions. Her fellow competitors within that space started to say, well, how are you doing it? And she would have to answer this publicly as she continued to go out and raise capital. And she would just say, I'm not going to tell you. That's why I'm different from you. This is a unique part of my business. I couldn't give the secret away. It's the only thing I'm doing differently than you're doing. We're coming to the same conclusion. I'm just doing it by a finger prick and you're going in through a vein and tubes of blood. That's where I've got you beat. Can't tell you how I'm doing it. And they go, well, not so fast. We don't keep a secret how we do it. Sure, we try to bring clients in the door. Sure, we work with insurance companies. Sure, we try to get doctors to choose us over a competitor. But we still tell the world how we do it. We take the blood and we send it to the labs and we separate and we'll tell you all the formula. We'll tell you exactly what we're doing. You got to tell us how you're doing it, because we believe As medical experts, of which you are not, we believe as people in the industry for countless days, weeks, months, years, and decades, we believe it is physically and physiologically impossible to draw that much data from that small of a sample. So we ask you again, how are you doing this? I'm not going to tell you. Trade secret. It's what made me a 23-year-old multi-billionaire. Trade secret. Can't tell you. So that's how she dealt with it. Whether you like that answer or not, she was able. That's how she dealt with it. And it worked. It was people within. So all of a sudden, people within her own company start looking around going, hey, this is weird. We're all doing this stuff, but none of us have actually seen how this is done. As a matter of fact, the lab, we don't hire this out like anybody else that draws blood. We have the lab right here. And nobody's allowed to go in it except for two human beings, neither of which are doctors. Elizabeth Holmes and her lover, by the way, who happened to also be the COO, her chief executive officer. They were the only two that were allowed to go into this room that was then producing the results. And people within the company started going, hey, this is weird. How come no one else can see it? And how are they getting these results? That guy's not impressive, and she has nothing to do with science or medicine. What is going on here? Then all of a sudden, those people started to get looked at. There was weird stuff within the office. They'd be sending emails, someone standing over their shoulder reading every word, monitoring their phone calls, checking their text messages. All of a sudden, it got weird where people that were working there that had no idea they were working for a fake company doing fake and fraudulent things started to look around and go, hey, something's amiss. Let's find out what it is. So they started to ask questions, of which they were shut down, of which they were then screened at a higher level. So finally, it was one of her own employees sent a message to the Times or the Post, somebody really big, and said, this is a scam. There is no doctors in this alleged lab. And those two people, her, Elizabeth Holmes, and her lover, CEO, COO, they wouldn't have the ability to do it. They don't know anything. These aren't Einstein types. And they're the only two that can go in here, which means they're just printing off results. They have no idea. And if you're dealing with somebody who's got a real ailment that needs to be treated and can only be put on the right path to treatment through the results of the blood tests, you got now got people's hands on your lives. This is just about bilking insurance companies out of money and investors out of money. People could die. So he gave them up. And sure enough, the feds came in. And sure enough, that's what it appears is happening. And I have to say appear because Elizabeth Holmes, to bring you full circle on this, has pled not guilty. She is not taking the deal and she is not going down. She is saying, at least for now, at least until this little what appears to be a game is up, she is saying, no, I cracked the code. I have the software. I have the ability. I'm going to tell my side in front of 12 peers that weren't smart enough to get out of jury duty. If I could convince James Mattis, amongst other people, to give money to my phony idea, I can convince 12 people not smart enough to get out of jury duty to find me innocent. And I don't know what's going to happen. Strange things happen. I do look forward to the drama and the theatrics around this. I do look forward to hearing what it is she's going to say and how she's going to convince them or attempt to convince them. But the story as a whole, it really was very, very fascinating. A 23-year-old with no degree and no history in medicine made it all the way to $9 billion overnight, worth $9 billion overnight, back down to zero. Every car comes with its share of stories. That ding in your bumper when you nervously picked up your first date, or the mileage you saved by riding your bike all summer. While you can't put a price tag on your stories, guys, now with TrueCar, you can at least find out what your car is worth when it's time to sell or trade it in. Just go to TrueCar. Simply enter your license plate numbers and watch how your car's details pop up. Then, just answer a few questions. Navigation, moonroof, high mileage, you already knew it was going to cost you. But now, you'll know how much of a hit you're going to take so you can plan ahead. Once you're finished, you will get a true cash offer sent to you in minutes. Take that to any local certified dealer and cash out or trade in. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your vehicle, check out TrueCar today. True cash offers, not available in all areas. Gaethje's going to fight Barboza, and I have to tell you guys, I love the fight. I loved it from the moment I heard it was going to happen. I look forward to seeing it, and I don't know if I could articulate for you guys why, right? It is not a contender's fight. It is not a title fight. It is not a super fight. It is a main event. It is with two killers. They don't have a personal grudge. They don't have a history. They don't have a backstory. Okay, great. A lot of times you end up in these spots where you don't have it. But it just makes it very tough for me to tell you guys the story as to why you're going to want to watch. Telling you the story becomes tough. I know why myself. I've watched maybe all of Justin Gaethje's fights. Maybe. If I haven't, I've watched maybe one or two slip through the cracks somewhere in the smaller ranks. But I was with him over the World Series of Fighting. So I saw his fights before he broke on and maybe became familiar with you guys. Barboza, so skilled, so fast. Both of these guys mean. Gaethje has this toughness that you cannot possibly not admire and respect. Barboza has these leg kicks that you can't possibly not fear. You can hear them when they land. It is like a baseball bat being swung into his opponent's thighs, ribs, head. It is a scary thing. I'll tell you how scary it is. Justin Gaethje, when he came over to the UFC, said, and I quote, "I want the scariest fight. And the scariest fight that I can think of is Barboza because I have nightmares about that guy kicking me," end quote. That's powerful. That's a tip of the hat. That's not your typical trash talk, as guys so falsely, continually engage in. But it is some interesting talk. And it is very interesting. After admitting he had nightmares about a guy kicking him, he finishes that thought by saying, "So I'd like to fight with that guy." Okay, that's not usually how fights are promoted, but guess what, Justin? You just won me over. You just taught us something new, and you win. So let's go ahead and do it. I still feel as though I'm struggling with telling you guys what the compelling storyline of this contest is. I know as a hardcore fan that watches everything, I know exactly why I want to see it. I know exactly why something special is going to happen. I know exactly why the other guys in the back are all going to go and take a seat. They're going to come out from the back. They're not going to watch that on a monitor. They're going to come out to their seats and take a seat. They're going to get a nacho and a soda and look forward to it. I know the respect and the honor. I know the pain. I know the toughness. I know the grit. I know everything that's on the line. But I don't know how to tell you guys. I don't. It's easier to tell you guys when there's some kind of a personal grudge or backstory or fool behavior or this guy's a good guy or this guy's a bad guy. It's just easier. This is a harder story to tell. But I can tell you something special is going to happen. This fight does not go 25 minutes. And whenever I break a fight down for you guys, I always assume it will. Even in the fights that don't, which represents the majority of the fights that we really want to see. But I always, when I give an analysis, because that's really important for the intangibles, what's going to happen in the third round? Who seems to hold up better? What's going to happen in the championship rounds? Should it be a five-round contest? So it's really important, and that's the way that my mind works. On this one, I am very comfortable in sharing with you guys in advance that my prediction, absolutely no way. It just doesn't go five rounds. You just can't fight the way these guys fight and make it that long. Now, when I brought that up with my producer, Nick, he actually threw a curveball at me. He said, "You know, Chael, I don't know if you've been following Justin Gaethje lately, but Justin Gaethje is more than happy to come out and tell anybody who will listen that he's going to go back to his wrestling. Not just because of the Barboza matchup, that was his plan after his last three fights, is to go back and do more wrestling. After all, he is an All-American wrestler." Well, that's true. And that would be a wrench into what I'm predicting for you guys. That would throw a wrench into things if Gaethje was to come out and start to try to just wrestle and smother. If he watched the Khabib fight against Barboza and got inspired by it and said, "Okay, I know how to go out and fight this guy." My pushback would be, and it was to Nick and it will be to you guys as well, Barboza's defense is of such that unless you are as powerful of a wrestler as Khabib, most other wrestlers don't succeed in wrestling with him. They just don't, unless they can really lure him into a fight, unless they really come out and lure him into a stand-up battle and spend meaningful amounts of time in the stand-up range and get Barboza to turn that switch off in his head that says, "Hey, I got to protect my lower body from a takedown attempt." If you go out and do that, I have seen some guys, who I would put on the same level of just pure straight wrestling as Gaethje have success. Outside of that, I don't think so, though. I think you got a stand-up battle. And I think that Barboza is just too damn powerful. And Justin Gaethje is just too damn mean to possibly allow another person to go all 25 minutes with him. I think you're going to see something fun. I will admit to you fully, I am struggling with telling you why. The story of this fight is a hard one to tell. And heavens knows, neither one of those knuckleheads came out and did it for us. Neither one of those guys told us why. But there's still something special there, isn't there? And we all do remember the day that that fight got announced. And we all have marked it on our calendar. And we have counted down those moments. So even if the story going in is a tough one to tell, and it is, the fact that something meaningful and entertaining and possibly historic, whoa, what a compliment. What a compliment I just gave them. Possibly something historic happens in that fight. We're going to have to wait and see. But I have that high of hopes for it. Oh, I'm going to leave you guys with one final thing. Michael Bisping was inducted into the Hall of Fame, and that was cool, and that was well-deserved. And a tip of the hat to Michael himself, but to all of the Bisping fans that came along the journey. And what a ride. What a ride he took you guys on. Especially you British fans that thought, well, we're never going to be able to make it in MMA. We just don't do the grappling over here. We don't have the jiu-jitsu. We don't have wrestling in our schools. We don't contest it in the Olympic Games. We're very good with the hands. We're pretty damn good with the hands and the feet. But when you throw that component, we're just not going to make it. All of a sudden, a young man named Michael Bisping steps forward and says, not only am I going to do this, I'm going to do this well, and I'm going to come up the hard way. I am going to go through tough, of which only one guy is going to be left standing. One guy is going to get a contract. I'm going to do everything. I'm going to make sure that that's me. Bounced around weight classes before he finally settled in at 185. There was even a point of his career, if you guys will remember, he was in the same spot that Jacare is in now. Doing everything right, beating all of the guys and just not getting that title shot. Being so close, but just not getting it. And that would have been a tough way for that career to go out, for anybody's career. So things weren't easy on him. They really weren't. As you look back at the story, you forget that. You just remember the guy that had a whole bunch of fun. Said a whole bunch of fun things, beat a whole bunch of fun guys, got that belt put around it. But that really would be retelling the Michael Bisping story. He was a success story to the highest of levels. A guy who was told, you cannot do this by his own, not just his family, not just his friends, his country. His country, who is a loyal and supportive country. And as soon as he showed, yes, I can, they said, okay, we're on board. We're coming to the dance too. But that's a tough thing. And he did win them over, but it was done in that order. It was not them getting behind him and then him going off and bringing back the gold. No, he had to convince them. And then they are very good sports fans. They're a big fight fan. They got behind him. I will admit to that. But you also have to understand the order that he did things. You have to understand how close Michael Bisping was to being cut short of not only being a world champion, of the world championship opportunity. Then you can go back and really start giving some compliments. Look at what happened to him against Dan Henderson. Part one. Humiliating moment, not just a devastating, a humiliating moment because of the way it went down, because of the kids on the internet with the things called the memes, because of the guys in the truck that are looking for highlight reel knockouts, and that happened to be one of them. Getting to the top, not ducking Henderson, in fact, calling him out, saying, I don't give a damn if you belong here or not. I want you. Put whatever on the line I got, but I want to get that one back. And then going out and doing it in an absolute war, in a classic. I only say this to you guys because I believe the Hall of Fame to be the most tremendous honor you can be given. I don't think you're given the honor of world champion. You got to have a lot of luck, but you got to have a lot of skill, a lot of hard work, and I think that you got to do that one on your own. Wherever the chips fall, for you or against you, but you got to wear that one. Hall of Fame is something different. That's where people, your peers, are judging and voting and nominating and elevating you. I really think it's a tremendous compliment, but also in the spirit of compliments, make sure you tell and make sure you appreciate Michael Bisping's story. But make sure that you have it accurately. It was tough. It was a tough go. And the chips and the odds were very much against him. And he made it all the way to the top. He really proved to people that dreams do come true. Hard work does pay off. And I don't mean to turn this into a motivational talk for you guys, but there is something very special there, a special compliment, and it really couldn't have happened to a better guy. So congratulations to Michael Bisping. For the rest of you, I've had it with you. But I'll see you again on Friday. Until then, I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.
Thanks for listening to You're Welcome with Chael Sonnen. Download new episodes every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
March Madness is upon us, and Dan Patrick has you covered.
I probably wouldn't do the hat because I don't want to mess up the hair.
Join Dan and the Danettes as they keep up with every twist and turn in the NCAA tournament on the Dan Patrick Show. Every day, hear the hottest takes and the biggest celebrity interviews from the world of sports and entertainment.
It's as cocky and confident as Baker Mayfield is.
Don't miss the madness on the Dan Patrick Show, right here on Podcast One.